Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news up to the 2nd of March 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Our first story, Kate, is one reported by Fast Company that women's workwear brand MM LaFleur has just launched a programme called Ready to Run that will offer complimentary loans of clothing to women running for public office on the federal, state or local level. The background to this initiative is clear evidence that a woman's physical appearance, including her clothing, has a significant impact on how successful she will be at her job, particularly as compared to her male colleagues, and the media and the general public tend to scrutinise the outfits of women in politics far more closely and harshly than their male counterparts. Female candidates simply need to apply on the brand's website, and once their credentials have been approved, they'll get three items of clothing, and after the election, the items of clothing will be donated to Bottomless Closet, a non-profit organisation that helps disadvantaged women in New York City looking for work. Each woman will receive free styling from MM LaFleur's army of in-house stylists who offer advice to the brand's customers, and so far, more than 500 women running for office have applied. Kate, what can business leaders learn from this initiative?
I think any of us could say that they've certainly seen male politicians that could do with a restyle or a makeover. But it is undoubtedly the case that more attention is paid to what women wear. And appearance does matter, as we often find out in the stories that we talk about in the podcast. So I think what we have to take from this is all the good that it can do, certainly in terms of getting help and support. And it's not just about what you're wearing. It's that somebody's interested in what you look like and give you advice, give you that important confidence boost, that the outfits are then used and that same level of interest, encouragement, confidence boost for young women going for jobs, trying to get into the job market. So it's really a feel-good story. And I think knowing what's coming up on the rest of the podcast, Rod, I think it's great. These initiatives, let's help everybody get on in the workplace.
That's great. Thank you, Kate. Our next story asks, is self-awareness the key to effective succession planning? This is the Walt Disney Company that stunned industry observers on the 25th of February by announcing the appointment of long-serving employee Bob Chapek as its new CEO, replacing the trailblazing Bob Iger, under whom the corporation enjoyed unprecedented growth, not just in terms of its own history, but the entertainment landscape as a whole. As a recent analysis of Iger's decision to hand over the reins, Inc.com columnist Jason Ayton credits the departed CEO for a brilliant move that demonstrates strong self-awareness. He writes, "First, let's just acknowledge that very few people leave on top. In fact, most people aren't self-aware enough to really know when it's time to step back and make room for a successor. Many leaders believe that the success they've had in the past will continue indefinitely. As a result, most leaders stick around far longer than they should and end up being forced out after their performance falters. In fact," he writes, "for many companies, figuring out who will lead a company next is one of the greatest risks to future success." Kate, would higher levels of self-awareness among senior leaders improve overall performance in succession planning in firms of all sizes?
I think this is a great example of how you can interpret people's actions in any way that really suits your position. Is it self-aware because he wants to go on to something new, or does he just want to go on to something new? For me, a really interesting part of this story is, well, what about Bob Chapek, who has been there for ages, but his moment seems to have come? Really good leaders have teams around them that deliver results. Nobody, as we know, does it on their own. And those good results will continue if he's got the right team. I just think it's about him wanting to move on, and brilliant leaving at what appears to be the top of your game. But I would think, let's not conjecture about individual motivation and call it self-awareness without a little bit more evidence. However, as you know, Rod, we advocate self-awareness. You can't ever be over self-aware. You can't be, you know, too much about yourself in order to understand how you relate, how you interact. So absolutely an advocate for that.
Thank you very much, Kate. Now, our next story is about apprenticeship funding. And it's the story that Education Secretary Gavin Williamson has attacked employers in England who use apprenticeship funding to pay for qualifications for senior managers. He wants to stop firms using the apprenticeship levy to subsidise Master of Business Administration courses for highly paid managers. Mr. Williamson says the the levy paid by large employers should benefit the job chances of the disadvantaged. He has ordered a review of the use of apprenticeship cash for senior leaders. The apprenticeship levy takes 0.5% of the salary bill from major employers, with the intention of using the money to improve skills and provide training. But the scheme has faced accusations that fake apprenticeships are being created to access funding rather than helping young people into new opportunities. There have been warnings that existing jobs have been rebadged as apprenticeships or the money has been used to benefit already well-qualified staff. Mr. Williamson has written to the Institute for Apprenticeships with his concerns about the use of apprenticeship funding on management qualifications for senior leaders. Kate, what does this tell us about how the apprenticeship levy is being used by employers?
It certainly tells us something about unintended consequences or things perhaps we didn't think about. And one of the trouble when you set targets in terms of number of people to achieve a qualification, as we've seen previously, or levels of spending, it has an impact on the industry that they start focusing on following the funding and playing with the funding metrics and lose sight of what this apprenticeship levy was supposed to deliver, which was to skill up people who, without the skills for the future, the ones that are needed, to get the employers much closer to the design of the apprenticeship so that they were getting exactly the skills that they wanted. And of course, leadership and management, how can anyone argue that that sort of development isn't needed in organisations? Again, I think it's quite ironic that the assumption is that if you're already well qualified, then therefore you don't really need to develop your leadership and management capability. And of course, we know that that's not the case. I suppose I would argue that for leadership and management, when it's a different sort of qualification, apprenticeship to one that you've done before, of course, it's adding value to the organisation. If it's at the expense of the people who really do need new skills in order to be able to survive and contribute to the organisation in the future, well, that's a moral concern that the leadership teams have to answer for themselves. But as we find with all leadership and management development, the context is so important to what's right and what fits. I welcome a review of this, but at the same time, the fact that there is this huge investment in leadership and management capability cannot be a bad thing for UK PLC.
Thank you, Kate. And finally, I don't think we can let this week go without looking at the impact of the ongoing coronavirus crisis on leadership and organisations. Writing for Forbes, William Arada suggests that coronavirus is creating a watershed moment for remote working, with companies that have been reluctant to allow their workforce to work remotely now having to weigh the risks in a way they never imagined, as productivity would take a huge dip if just one infected employee came to work. He writes that some companies are getting out in front by promoting remote work. For example, the Washington Post reports that IBM, which nearly 3 years ago ended remote work for some US employees, said it had asked workers in coronavirus-affected areas to work from home wherever possible, and Japan's largest ad agency, Dentsu, told all its workers in its Tokyo headquarters to work from home. Arada predicts that when the coronavirus is finally on the wane, the return to office working will be slowed, and in some companies it won't happen at all, because once you introduce remote working to your employees, it may be hard to woo them back into the office, and this in turn could actually lead to a more successful workforce. Kate, do you agree with Arada's analysis and his observation that anyone who still believes that productivity and company loyalty are hurt when workers go remote needs a reality check? Those fears are not backed up by data.
We know from our own research how popular flexible working is, how people will sacrifice salary in order to work for a company that recognises or allows them that autonomy and that control over their working day, to lessen the commute, to be able to blend work with other demands on one's time. Studies do indicate that productivity isn't adversely affected. And if we look at broader measures like retention, like loyalty, then it seems to be only a good thing. And it will be interesting to see when the crisis is over, how much people enjoy being able to work flexibly, to not have to come into an office every day, and also how they've maintained the relationships with colleagues. Because people who have suddenly found themselves working flexibly will still have that sort of office way of working, and I'm sure they'll find great ways of communicating, of keeping in touch. Very important, I think, for all companies to realise how important technology is and to have good tech that enables this sort of connectivity. But on the whole, I'm really looking forward to some of the analysis that follows this and to hear from companies who have found themselves working flexibly and then thought, you know what, this is great.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.